When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets, in the car while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab. This is Allison Loudermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And here at Stuff from the Science Lab, we are big fans of Mary Roach, who, if you're not familiar with her work, she's a science writer, and she's written the book Stiff, Spook, Bonk, and now Packing for Mars.
The Curious Science of Life in the Void.
Yeah.
And that was released this summer.
Yeah, her three previous books are all great. Stiff deals with the story of human cadavers.
Interestingly, when we interviewed her, she was saying that she didn't think that book would sell.
Yeah. She's been surprised at how some of her follow-up books didn't just instantly surpass that one. Because, you know, cadavers, okay. Then the second one, Spook, was about science and the supernatural, which is also a really great book. I read that one. And then the third one was about sex. Bonk.
Right.
And she was sure that one was going to be the big, the one that's going to be even more of a hit. But Stiff has remained the colossal bestseller of her work so far. And they're all great.
Yeah. We highly advocate reading them. So we did have the chance to interview her, and, we're going to share some of that interview with you guys today. So I thought one of the things that she did really well is just kind of breaking down the mythology of the astronaut and making astronauts into just regular old humans. Here she is talking about the first astronaut she met.
I remember my first astronaut. You know, I was down at Johnson Space Center, and I'd never met an astronaut. And it was this guy, Lee Moore, and he's just this regular guy. He's wearing kind of a Hawaiian shirt and chinos and brown shoes. And I was like, oh, I'm going to meet an astronaut. And I meet this guy, and I'm like, oh, my God, they're just people, for starters. You know, so the whole, mythology just doesn't, you meet them, and right away you realize they're just people. And then you start to learn about what they go through, all the things that you were saying, plus some of the, the kind of worrisome physiological changes. And it very quickly ceases to be this high glamour job.
Yeah, and then you asked her if there was one particular example of a space absurdity that really just made her decide, yeah, this is my next book. This is what I'm going to explore next.
I think there was that paper I came across fairly early on when I was pretty sure I was going to do it, but not entirely sure. I came across this paper from 1964 on space nutrition and related waste problems, and it was these guys sort of thinking outside the box about Mars, and they were, you know, because it's a 2 to 3 year mission, and food is, you can't pack lots of delicious food and, you know, launch it for a crew of 6 for 3 years. So they were thinking, like, well, we could create clothing out of edible keratin fibers that they could wear for a while, and then when they were done wearing it, they could eat it. And then there was the guy who was saying that, they could actually be eating pieces of the spacecraft. We could, you know, use edible proteins for some of the interiors that we won't be needing after we've, you know, been on the surface of Mars and we're coming home. We'll just eat that module, and, you know, just this sort of plus the, you know, the very, very extreme recycling that would have to be done in terms of drinking your own sweat and urine. I think at that point I was like, oh yeah, this is Mary Roach country.
So of course we had to ask her if she was a space geek going in to writing the book, or if she became one in the process. And it turns out she was a little bit of one beforehand, but in writing the book she found herself like watching NASA TV all the time. So here's what she had to say about that.
I was a little bit of a space geek. I never watched Star Trek, and I wasn't a science fiction reader, but I did a story for Discover magazine years ago where I went to the neutral buoyancy tank, which is it's like the size of the Gulf of Mexico. It's not. It's huge, but it's this huge swimming pool that they submerge pieces of the International Space Station and then have the astronauts rehearse wearing their actual suits, rehearse all the moves that they're going to do. And I remember just being kind of overwhelmed by the delightful geekiness of it all, and, you know, and I am kind of a geek, so NASA was kind of the magical kingdom in a way. It was like, wow, look at all this stuff. You know, just all manner of things you never would imagine existing are down there.
We were talking about how the public's perception and enthusiasm for space exploration has kind of waxed and waned over the years. You even ventured to say that it might be a little boring now.
Blasphemy. Yeah, definitely it's been boring for a while there, because, you know, it started out really exciting with space exploration. You know, these people are going out in the space, they're getting stuff done, they're cowboys, you know? And then there was this long period of kind of, to most people, I think, kind of boring science experiments in space. So, yeah, we had to ask Mary where she thought we are now and where we're going.
Yeah, and how we could turn things around for space exploration.
I think we're at a point where we could turn it around and make it not boring by going somewhere new. You know, I think that the moon base plan to go back and send people for 6 months or more to live on the moon, I think just because it's the moon and people feel, the general public feels like, well, we've been there. We went there 7 times. Why are we going back? I think that to go somewhere new, if the partisan bickering and the policy and the politics can sort of, if they can sort out what we're going to do and where we're going to go, then I think you really, and it's somewhere new, you really could start to capture people's imaginations again. It doesn't have to be Mars. I mean, a near Earth asteroid, just something that is different and exciting for people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still, even when we were in orbit, a lot of really, really interesting, cool stuff was going on. It just doesn't always get reported that way or reported at all.
So we also ask her how astronauts have changed, or rather the role of the astronaut has changed, again, from the cowboys of the right stuff to the more, you know, the more of the scientist astronaut we have today. So she talked a little about the clash between the old school and the new school scientist.
They couldn't be more different. It really was a 180-degree turn on what makes the perfect astronaut, because you got the, you know, early on, one guy, so it didn't matter if he didn't play well with others. You have one guy in a mission that's a few hours long, and So what you want is somebody who's aggressive, brave, unfazed by high risk, able to deal with an emergency, calm in an emergency, that sort of the right stuff, which became very much the wrong stuff by the time we get to the shuttle era, where you've got, or the ISS even more to the point, where you've got 6 months and longer missions and five, six people, then you really don't want that kind of personality. You would want somebody who's, you know, the list of attributes, I love some of them, like ability to form stable and quality interpersonal relationships. Like John Glenn, can you imagine his era, that being even the word relationships entering into it? You know, flexibility, fairness, empathy, all these things that you don't really associate with the right stuff. But then, you know, going into the future, if we do go to Mars, then you kind of want both of those, because it's going to be a bigger crew. So you want people who get along well in a group. But then again, you also need a self-starter and somebody who can deal with emergencies with sort of leadership and calm, you know, that whole right stuff thing. So I don't know how they're going to find these people. I mean, it's kind of a superhuman combination. People are usually one or the other.
Speaking of the perfect astronaut, we went through this crazy list of physiological traits that some space agencies think are important for astronauts to have. And it was a funny exchange. So here's us chatting about how the astronaut might turn out if all the various random traits were taken into account.
Yeah, there's all these. You could get, they're talking about you'd look for people whose intestinal flora do not produce methane, because that's explosive. So you got to look at what their farts contain. You don't want somebody who snores, because that wakes everybody up. You don't want someone with bad breath. That's the Chinese Space Agency's rule. Also, African American women, women in general, because they consume less oxygen than food. African Americans, thicker bones, density. So you want a deaf mute African American woman who does not snore and doesn't produce methane. And then on top of that, the right personality.
Of course, as science writers and science editors, we had to ask her about her method in writing this book, and really in kind of writing all of them. And
what's amazing about her writing is that she's not just summarizing journal findings or, you know, kind of twisting the research into a new light, or even, she is very much translating it into layman's terms,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Much as we hope to do. But she's getting to people in the flesh. She's talking to them. She's making them come alive on the page.
Well, yeah, and also Mary Roach is very much a character in her own books. You know, it's like you're really right there with Mary in each of these as she goes out and talks to these people, you know, and really learns, you know, what the dirt is on everything from corpses to going into space.
Yeah, so here she is talking a little bit about storytelling and her method of putting together books and why science isn't boring.
I mean, when I contact people, frequently they say, "Oh, well, I'll send you a paper and we can talk." And I'm always having to write back and say, "No, it doesn't really work very well for readers that way. I need to actually come visit you and be there and see what you're doing and have a scene with people who are talking to each other and doing things." And even that isn't a traditional book narrative. Usually, that's a through line all the way through the book, and that is. Yeah, that's another way to do it, and probably the best way. But even just having a chapter by chapter, a setting, and a narrative framework to hang the facts on helps a lot in getting people interested in science. Because people have this notion that science is boring, which kind of blows my mind. Because science is it's you. You know, it's your
right.
body. It's your backyard. It's your dog. It's the weather. It is everything. And how could you possibly think it's boring? But you know, it's often among scientists, because they're at such a high level of understanding, it is boring to the general public to pick up a paper from a journal. So you do have to, as a science writer, which is a title I guess I wear, but you do have to find ways to make it accessible and make it real, and storytelling is, I think, the best way. Yeah.
She really got some amazing details on stuff that we never hear about, at least not regularly, and not certainly not stuff that NASA broadcasts. Pretty much the messy realities of motion sickness and going to the bathroom in space and all sorts of good stuff like that. So I was asking her if astronauts were relieved to finally lift the curtain on the reality of life in space, the sometimes smelly reality of life in space.
Well, cosmonauts in general are just very straightforward, just lay it on the line kind of people. There's less concern, I think, about what is the proper thing to say, maybe. So just culturally, they're a little more freewheeling in their conversations. And in fact, I was surprised by, if you sit down and have a conversation with an astronaut, even an active astronaut, not retired, it's always easier when somebody's retired, but and you talk about a range of topics, not just, you know, sex and poop. If you're having an interesting conversation about larger issues of space exploration and challenges, and you eventually make your way around to something like that, that's fine. I think what bothers them is when you specifically would request an interview specifically about sex and space, because that, I think, to them it's kind of insulting in a way, like that this is the most interesting thing that the public can find. You know, when they do what they do, and a lot of the research that they do, and it is interesting in its own right. And so I think it's frustrating when people only ask about those things. So if you bring it up in a larger context, they're fine talking about it.
And along those lines, because again, there's this whole chapter just on going to the bathroom in space.
She called it the definitive chapter.
Yeah, it's you know, if you only read one chapter in this book, you know, it's kind of like it's the one to read. And I have to, you know, I have to say, I thought I knew a lot about going to the bathroom in space going in.
We did that whole podcast.
Yeah, we did a podcast on it. I've written about it. But Mary had some stuff that I was not prepared for.
Escapees.
Yeah.
I was watching a Jon Stewart clip. She was on a Jon Stewart, and they
she's
had this
everywhere. Yeah.
She's really been doing a lot of PR for this. She was talking about escapees.
Wow. So I had to ask her which she thought was grosser, a phenomenon called fecal popcorning.
Oh, that still gets me every time.
Or the fecal glove. So here we go. Here's what she had to say about that.
I think if you're a dog owner, probably not that big a deal, because it's really like, you know, those people who go walk down the street with a New York Times sleeve, plastic newspaper sleeve, and pick up their dog poop, turn it inside out, done. No big deal. So I would imagine somebody who's used to that wouldn't, I mean, it is your own material, which is a little unusual. But I think that the issue with the shuttle toilet with escapees, as they called it, with little pieces escaping and making their way around the capsule or the module, or the shuttle, in this case, is very distasteful. I mean, there was a mission, I think I mentioned in the book, where there was sort of dust, because the materials are sort of quick dried, and the dust would, when the dust came out, you're inhaling that, and that's a disturbing, and also, you don't necessarily want that in your lungs. So I think that was the high tech. I would guess that when the high tech device malfunctions, it is more. In fact, I know it is, because there were people on that mission who opted not to use the shuttle toilet and used the contingency, which was the fecal bag, because of that problem with this. They called it blowback. It was that dust that was escaping and flying around. I think it was the shuttle. Perhaps it was the ISS. But either way, they preferred to deal with the indignities of the fecal bag than to be inhaling that stuff.
So that pretty much wraps it up. But I do want to end with Mary's take on the future of manned spaceflight.
I would love to see a manned Mars mission, partly because, you know, this is something I didn't realize before I did the book, but every program has kind of been preparing for the next. Like Gemini was just flat out working out the kinks for a moonshot. It was like, let's practice docking in space. Let's see what happens to two people's skin if they wear spacesuits for 2 weeks without a shower. Let's figure out all the steps here in orbit, and then we go on to the moon. So Gemini was preparation for Apollo. The International Space Station has been this 10-year exercise in global space cooperation, all these different nations communicating, participating, lending expertise and funding. And the whole aim of that was to prepare for long-term space, life in space, which was the whole idea there was getting ready for Mars. So to stop now seems like, well, what was all that about? What was the past 50 years about if we're not going to go on to Mars? So, I mean, I know that's not, you know, obviously there's budget issues. It's very expensive. I would love it to be an international effort where a lot of different nations are contributing money and expertise. And also just everybody on the planet would be watching. It would be kind of an amazing event for the world to witness. So, I mean, it makes me kind of sad. It probably won't happen in my lifetime. I'm guessing I'm 51, and if, you know, 2040, we'd be lucky to have this happening, I think, unless somebody proposes something really radical, like a one-way mission where people go and then just live the rest of their lives there, and because then, you know, the tricky part is coming back.
So there you have it, our interview with Mary Roach. She shared a lot of great stuff and was just a real pleasure to talk to. Just, you know, she turned out, we were wondering, it's like, oh, I wonder if she's going to be like she is in the book, you know, is it going to be the same experience? And it really is. She was great.
Yeah. You know, we asked whether she would pack for Mars, and she said, no, not the personality type for Mission to Mars, but a 2-week trip to the moon, sign Mary up. After all, she did climb aboard the Vomit Comet, aka the C9. So I think she's pretty much game for just about anything, including topics.
So yeah, if you've never read anything by Mary Roach, check those out. She also did a TED Talk, having to do with like 10 like things about sex, that came out around the time of her Bonk book. So, also do a TED Talk search on that or a YouTube search and you can find that.
Yeah. And by all means, if you've read her or if you've read Packing for Mars, tell us what you think on Facebook. We're Stuff from the Science Lab, or on Twitter, we're Lab Stuff, or you can always send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.